Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in this evening. It's about 7 past the hour. Yuck! What a weekend, huh? All the misery of Memorial Day, and it has it is definitely a day of misery. There, I can't find any joy anywhere in this holiday, and God knows I've tried. Especially not now, you know, especially in the age of Bush, when soldiers and Marines are being killed at the whim of somebody as useless and as murderous as George Bush. There's just, I don't know. It's really ugly, ugly business. So I hope you were able to subsume that feeling, if you share that, and have a good three-day weekend. I love three-day weekends, frankly. I really do. The meat grinder continues. Bush and his crime machine continue to do their damage, wreak their havoc. Apparently there's no stopping it. Cindy Sheehan, everybody knows now, Cindy Sheehan bailed out. There have been a couple other prominent people who, without a lot of publicity, not as public as Cindy Sheehan, have pretty much expressed the same thing. It is a problem. It is a problem. At my website today, I mentioned it, the frustration. It seems like no matter what happens, the Bush crime machine continues to operate. The voters can turn out the Republican Party and send Democrats. Keeps operating. The American people can demand an end to the war. Nope. Going to keep operating. The American people can demand that the troops. Nope. Going to increase the troops. Nothing seems to work. Nothing seems to work. And the media continues to flap along, doing its best to do nothing. That's pretty much what it is. They certainly put a lot of coverage on television about the Venezuelan privately owned television network in Venezuela that sees, Hugo Chavez has decided to shut down. Of course, the irony is most of what the people are protesting, I'm not defending Chavez's closing down a TV station. Although, can you imagine a TV station in the United States that constantly called for the overthrow of George W. Bush? How long do you think that one would be on the air in the United States? But the irony, which I think has been lost on most people, is that the reason the people are protesting in the streets of the cities in Venezuela, Caracas, or wherever they're protesting, is not, in fact, because another voice for democracy has been lost, but because this TV network was the one that produced all, if not all, most of the soap operas, most of the American Idol, Venezuelan Idol-style shows, most of the crap and garbage. That's what they're protesting. The majority of the people in Venezuela support Hugo Chavez. But the way it's being reported in this country, oh, my God, another voice for democracy. Close it. Can you imagine what would happen if all of a sudden ABC or CBS or NBC or Fox or CNN even a cable channel, a commercial cable channel, started promoting the overthrow of the government of George W. Bush? In the first place, don't we have laws against that?
Yeah, we do.
But it's being spun in this country, you see, as though democracy is being slammed into the mud under the heel of South America's Hitler, Hugo Siegheil Chavez. Incredible stuff. Unless you've been in a cave. I'm going to digress for a moment. We'll come back. Unless you've been in a cave, you know that the Chinese have been sending poison, exporting poison around the world, and it's food and medicine, pet food, human food, medicine. The Chinese entrepreneurs slash killers, you call them what you want. There's no regulation. What the Republicans want in this country is what the Chinese had in that country. No regulation, no effective control over food and drugs, nothing, nothing. Eventually, the market determines whether or not a product's going to be pulled off the off the shelves, made unavailable. Pet food has gotten a lot of attention in this country, whereas in certain Central American countries, it is a toothpaste and cough syrup containing diethylene glycol, a toxic chemical sometimes used to make antifreeze. In Panama, the country, more than 100 people died last year from cough medicine laced with diethylene glycol made in China and labeled as a harmless syrup. It just goes up. But this is exactly, you know, what the hell is the Bush administration making any kind of noise about this at all? Why is our media? Why are our media making any kind of noise about it all? This is what is being promoted in this country. No regulation. Let the market determine. If enough people die, then they'll stop buying the product. Well, the Chinese, bless their hearts, have decided, no, that's bad for the country. So the former director of China's top food and drug safety agency was sentenced to death today. That's right. He's going to be shot. Summarily executed after a quick trial. There was no trial, really. He pled guilty to corruption and accepting bribes. So, according to the Chinese news agency, bingo, you're dead. Now, if the Bush crime family wants to institute that kind of rule, okay, let's go for it. The trial of this former director of the, let's call it the Chinese FDA, the trial suggests, according to New York Times, though, that the problem is a lot more serious in China than just toothpaste, mouthwash, and pet food. Thousands of people in China every year are sick and are killed because of the counterfeiting and mislabeling, deliberately, not because somebody screwed up, but deliberately. It happens all the time. Small Chinese drug makers have long been accused of manufacturing phony or substandard drugs, marketing them to the nation's hospitals and pharmacies. Oh, my God! Xinhua, the Chinese state-controlled Chinese news agency, reported that the court had decided that the death penalty for this freak was appropriate, given what the court called, quote, the huge amounts of bribes involved and the great damage inflicted on the country and the public by Mr. Zheng's dereliction of duty, end quote. Gee willikers! Now, I'm against the death penalty, but can you imagine if that applied in this country? Why, the top cadre of the entire Bush crime family would have been executed long ago, right? Some drug experts in China agreed that Mr. Zheng, the guy who has been sentenced to death, deserves a death sentence because abuses in the drug industry became widespread during his tenure. Think about the American drug industry. What's the latest? Vandia or Zandia? What is it, Kathy? Zandia? And the one before that? Vioxx? And the one before that? 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 Huh? Who pays in this country? Nobody. Nobody. Maybe a few lawsuits that are stalled in the courts. And usually when it finally gets to the Supreme Court, the right-wing Supreme Court, freedom of speech for corporations. A professor at the Hunan China Academy of Sciences said, quote, the death penalty wouldn't be excessive punishment for Mr. Zheng. Mr. Zheng was simply using the power given by the state to pursue his personal ambition, end quote. So within the next week or so. Now, the irony here is within the next week or so, when they take this guy out and put a couple of bullets in the back of his head, and execute him for his crimes. They'll immediately take his body to the nearest morgue and dismember it, take out the organs, and probably sell them to people waiting for a new heart, a new liver, a new lungs, new corneas. The hour. Andrew Basevich, who is a professor, teaches history and international relations at Boston University. He's a former veteran. His son died May 13th after a suicide bomb explosion in Iraq. And he has written, he's a retired colonel. He's a staunch Republican. I mean, really a Republican. Who opposed the war from the start. He writes the following. It was in the Washington Post. And if we run out of time in the segment, I'll finish it up after the break. He writes, parents who lose children, whether through accident or illness, inevitably wonder what they could have done to prevent their loss. When my son was killed in Iraq earlier this month at age 27, I found myself pondering my responsibility for his death. Among the hundreds of messages that my wife and I have received, two bore directly on this question. Both held me personally culpable, insisting that my public opposition to the war had provided aid and comfort to the enemy. Each said that my son's death came as a direct result of my anti-war writings. This may seem like a vile accusation to lay against a grieving father, but in fact it has become a staple of American political discourse, repeated endlessly by those keen to follow President Bush and to allow him a free hand in waging his war. By encouraging, quote, the terrorists, end quote, opponents of the Iraq conflict increase the risk to U.S. troops. Although the First Amendment protects anti-war critics from being tried for treason, it provides no protection for the hardly less serious charge of failing to support the troops, today's civic equivalent of dereliction of duty. What exactly is a father's duty when his son is sent into harm's way? Among the many ways to answer that question, mine was this one. As my son was doing his utmost to be a good soldier, I strove to be a good citizen. As a citizen, I have tried since September 11, 2001, to promote a critical understanding of U.S. foreign policy. I know that even now, people of goodwill find much to admire in Bush's response to that awful day. They applaud his doctrine of preventive war. They endorse his crusade to spread democracy across the Muslim world and to eliminate tyranny from the face of the earth. They insist not only that his decision to invade Iraq in 2003 was correct, but that the war there can still be won. Some, the members of the surge is already working school of thought, even profess to see victory just over the horizon. I believe that such notions are dead wrong and doomed to fail. In books, articles, and op-ed pieces, in talks to audiences large and small, I have said as much. I once wrote in this section of the Washington Post in August 2005, quote, the long war is an unwinnable one. The United States needs to liquidate its presence in Iraq, placing the onus on Iraqis to decide their fate and creating the space for other regional powers to assist in brokering a political settlement. We've done all that we can do. End quote. Not for a second did I expect my own efforts to make a difference, but I did nurse the hope that my voice might combine with those of others, teachers, writers, activists, and ordinary folks, to educate the public about the folly of the course on which the nation has embarked. I hoped that those efforts might produce a political climate conducive to change. I genuinely believe that if the people spoke, our leaders in Washington would listen and respond. This, I can now see, was an illusion. The people have spoken, and nothing of substance has changed. The November 2006 midterm election signified an unambiguous repudiation of the policies that landed us in our present predicament. But half a year later, the war continues with no end in sight. Indeed, by sending more troops to Iraq, and by extending the tours of those like my son who are already there, Bush has signaled his complete disregard for what was quaintly referred to as, quote, the will of the people, end quote. To be fair, responsibility for the war's continuation now rests no less with the Democrats who control Congress than with the president and his party. After my son's death, my state's senators, Edward M. Kennedy and John F. Kerry, telephoned to express their condolences. Stephen Lynch, our congressman, attended my son's wake. Kerry was present for the funeral. My family and I greatly appreciated such gestures. But when I suggested to each of them the necessity of ending the war, I got the brush off. More accurately, after ever so briefly pretending to listen, each treated me to a convoluted explanation that said, in essence, don't blame me. To whom do Kennedy, Kerry, and Lynch listen? We know the answer. To the same people who have the ear of George Bush and Karl Rove, namely, wealthy individuals and institutions. We'll finish this on the other side of the break.
My youngest son came home today. My youngest son came home today. His friends marched with him all the way. The flutes and drums beat out the time, as in his box of polished pine, like dead meat on a butcher's tray. My youngest son came home today, and this time he's home to see.
Still at war. It's in our country's interest to find those who would do harm to us and get them out of harm's way.
Oh God. 26 before the hour. Back to the op-ed piece written by Andrew J. Basevich, retired Army colonel, veteran, and Republican, conservative. Teaches history and international relations at Boston University. His son died May 13 after a suicide bomb explosion in Iraq. He, in the first part, he was talking about how he has always opposed this war. And he writes, after my son's death, my state senators, Edward Kennedy, John F. Kerry, telephoned to express their condolences. Stephen Lynch, our congressman, attended my son's wake. Kerry was present for the funeral mass. My family and I greatly appreciated such gestures, but when I suggested to each of them the necessity of ending the war, I got the brush off. More accurately, after ever so briefly pretending to listen, each treated me to a convoluted explanation that said, in essence, don't blame me. To whom do Kennedy, Kerry, and Lynch listen? We know the answer. To the same people who have the ear of George W. Bush and Karl Rove, namely, wealthy individuals and institutions. Money buys access and influence. Money greases the process that will yield us a new president in 2008. When it comes to Iraq, money ensures that the concerns of big business, big oil, bellicose evangelicals, and Middle East allies gain a hearing. By comparison, the lives of U.S. soldiers figure as an afterthought. Memorial Day orators will say that a GI's life is priceless. Don't believe it? I know what value the U.S. government assigns to a soldier's life. I've been handed the check. It's roughly what the Yankees will pay Roger Clemens per inning once he starts pitching next month. Money maintains the Republican-Democratic duopoly of trivialized politics. It confines the debate over U.S. policy to well-hewn channels. It preserves intact the cliches of 1933 through 1945 about isolationism, appeasement, and the nation's call to so-called global leadership. Money inhibits any serious accounting of exactly how much our misadventure in Iraq is costing. Money ignores completely the question of who actually pays. It negates democracy, rendering free speech little more than a means of recording dissent. This is not some great conspiracy. It's the way our system works. In joining the army, my son was following in his father's footsteps. Before he was born, I had served in Vietnam. As military officers, we shared an ironic kinship of sorts, each of us demonstrating a peculiar knack for picking the wrong war at the wrong time. Yet he was the better soldier, brave and steadfast and irrepressible. I know that my son did his best to serve our country. Through my own opposition to a profoundly misguided war, I thought I was doing the same. In fact, while he was giving his all, I was doing nothing. In this way, I failed him. I tell you, it's getting more and more difficult. On the one hand, is it not? To remain in this state of inertia that all of us seem to have gotten into? On the other hand, one of Newton's laws of motion regarding inertia maintains that that state maintains until acted upon by an outside force. I wonder what our outside force is going to be. I do. I wonder that about myself. And because I feel that a lot of people who listen to this program, if not most, if not all, share that share the same sensibility about what's going on in this country as I do, by extension then, I wonder what it will take to move not just me. What's going to be that effect that ends my inertia? What's going to be that effect that ends yours? What's it going to take? This veteran, retired colonel, professor, who lost his son, killed in Iraq a couple of months ago, Andrew Vasevich, he admits, while his son was giving his all, I was doing nothing, and in this way I failed him. And I've admitted that on this program. No, I don't write books, and I don't give speeches, and I don't make personal appearances, and you know, except maybe for a birthday party or a cruise or something. That's not my style. It just isn't. What is my style is to try to motivate myself and anyone else who listens to this program to come up with an idea, to just anything, just what? What is it going to take? It's a question I've been asking for about 3 or 4 years now. And every time I ask it on the air, I'm not asking you, I'm asking myself. It just so happens the microphone is on. You know, what's it going to take? What's it going to take until we say that this criminal enterprise that now runs this country has reached the end of our ability to allow it to stay in office? What's it going to take? Is it not clear at this point? Are there any Democrats, capital D, are there any Democrats listening to this program tonight who are not willing or able to admit that the Democratic Party has failed? Utterly. We elected them 6 months ago, even overcoming, in turning out in the numbers that we turned out in, we overcame the jiggering of the voting machines, that was done by several Republican state secretaries of state. We overcame the caging, blocking voters across the country from voting, engineered by Karl Rove and the Justice Department. We overcame, we turned out in such numbers because it was like, no, we can't do this anymore. So we sent the Democrats into power once again after a 12-year hiatus. And said, you got to do something. Your election year rhetoric says you will do something, so we're going to trust you. Okay, we're going to vote you into office. And what has happened? Seriously. Oh, that's right. They got the minimum wage increased. That's wonderful. Over 2 years, the minimum wage will go up to, factoring in inflation, precisely what it was in 1979. Okay, let's all be happy about that. So if not the Democratic Party, and certainly not media in this country, media, you know, with the exception of several writers, there are still enclaves, outposts in the print medium, in newspapers, I'm talking about mainstream stuff now, that are still fighting the fight. There's a lot of the fight being fought online, granted. But online is not where most people have their brains washed. That's done every afternoon at 6:30 local time. It's done every Sunday morning on the televised talk shows. And it's done all day long on 99.9% of the radio stations in this country, border to border and coast to coast. That's where the washing, the scrubbing, the inertia occurs. So what's left? I'm puzzled. I'm stuck. I'm stymied. One more personal blog here, and then we're going to go to your phone calls tonight. This one from Cindy Sheehan. I have endured a lot of smear and hatred since Casey was killed, and especially since I became the so-called face of the American anti-war movement, especially since I renounced any tie I have remaining with the Democratic Party. I have been further trashed on such so-called liberal blogs as the Democratic Underground. Being called an attention whore and being told good riddance are some of the more milder rebukes. I have come to some heartbreaking conclusions this Memorial Day morning. These are not spur-of-the-moment reflections, but things I have been meditating on for about a year now. The conclusions that I have slowly and very reluctantly come to are very heartbreaking to me. The first conclusion is that I was the darling of the so-called left as long as I limited my protest to George Bush and the Republican Party. Of course, I was slandered and libeled by the right as a tool of the Democratic Party. This label was to marginalize me and my message. How could a woman have an original thought or be working outside of our two-party system? However, when I started to hold the Democratic Party to the same standards that I held the Republican Party, support for my cause started to erode, and the so-called left started labeling me with the same slurs that the right used. I guess no one paid attention to me when I said that the issue of peace and people dying for no reason is not a matter of right or left, but a matter of right and wrong. I am deemed a radical because I believe that partisan politics should be left to the wayside when hundreds of thousands of people are dying for a war based on lies that is supported by Democrats and Republicans alike. It amazes me that people who are sharp on the issues and can zero in like a laser beam on lies, misrepresentations, and political expediency when it comes to one party refuse to recognize it in their own party. Blind party loyalty is dangerous, whatever side it occurs on. People of the world look on us Americans as jokes because we allow our political leaders so much murderous latitude that if we don't find alternatives to this corrupt two-party system, our representative republic will die and be replaced with what we are rapidly descending into, with nary a check or balance, a fascist corporate wasteland. I am demonized because I don't see party affiliation or nationality when I look at a person. I see that person's heart. If someone looks, dresses, acts, talks, and votes like a Republican, then why do they deserve support just because he or she calls him or herself a Democrat? I've also reached the conclusion that I'm doing what I'm doing because I am an attention whore. If that's the case, then I really need to be committed. I have invested everything I have into trying to bring peace with justice to a country that wants neither. If an individual wants both, then normally he or she is not willing to do more than walk in a protest march or sit behind his or her computer criticizing others. I have spent every available cent I got from the money a grateful country gave me when they killed my son, and every penny that I have received in speaking or book fees since then. I have sacrificed a 29-year marriage and have traveled for extended periods of time away from Casey's brother and sisters, and my health has suffered, and my hospital bills from last summer are in collection because I have used all my energy trying to stop this country from slaughtering innocent human beings. I have been called every despicable name that small minds can think of and have had my life threatened many times. The most devastating conclusion that I reached this morning, however, was that Casey did indeed die for nothing. His precious lifeblood drained out in a country far away from his family who loves him, killed by his own country, which is beholden to and run by a war machine that even controls what we think. I've tried every day since he died to make his sacrifice meaningful. Casey died for a country which cares more about who will be the next American idol than how many people will be killed in the next few months, while Democrats and Republicans play politics with human lives. It is so painful to me to know that I bought into this system for so many years, and Casey paid the price for that allegiance. I failed, my boy, and that hurts the most. I also have tried to work within a peace movement that often puts personal egos above peace in human life. This group won't work with that group. He won't attend an event if she's going to be there. And why does Cindy Sheehan get all the attention anyway? It is hard work for peace when the very movement that is named after it has so many divisions. We'll take a break and finish this up in a minute. Losing hope is easy. When your only friend is gone, and every time you look around, well, it all just seems to change. But hanging on is easy. When you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all, you're not the only one who's afraid of change. About 6 before the hour, back to Cindy Sheehan's essentially resignation letter. She goes on, our brave young men and women in Iraq have been abandoned there indefinitely by their cowardly leaders who move them around like pawns on a chessboard of destruction. And the people of Iraq have been doomed to deaths and fates worse than death by people worried more about elections than people. However, in 5, 10, or 15 years, our troops will come limping home in another abject defeat, and 10 or 20 years from then, our children's children will be seeing their loved ones die for no reason because their grandparents also bought into this corrupt system. George Bush will never be impeached because if the Democrats dig too deeply, they may unearth a few skeletons in their own graves, and the system will perpetuate itself in perpetuity. I'm going to take whatever I have left and go home. I'm going to go home and be a mother to my surviving children and try to regain some of what I have lost. I will try to maintain and nurture some very positive relationships that I have found in the journey that I was forced into when Casey died, and try to repair some of the ones that have fallen apart since I began this single-minded crusade to try to change a paradigm that is now, I'm afraid, carved in immovable, unbendable and rigidly mendacious marble. Camp Casey has served its purpose. It's for sale. Anyone want to buy 5 beautiful acres in Crawford, Texas? I will consider any reasonable offer. I hear George Bush will be moving out soon, too, which makes the property even more valuable. This is my resignation letter, as the so-called face of the American anti-war movement. This is not my checkers moment, referring to Nixon, because I will never give up trying to help people in the world who are harmed by the empire of the good old USA. But I am finished working in or outside of this system. This system forcefully resists being helped and eats up the people who try to help it. I am getting out before it totally consumes me or any more people that I love and the rest of my resources. Goodbye, America. You are not the country that I love. And I finally realized, no matter how much I sacrifice, I can't make you be that country unless you want it. It's up to you now. From Cindy Sheehan's diary. If you discount the occasionally purple prose in there, I mean, Cindy never made any claim to being a writer. She is a woman who was motivated strictly by emotion and then by her intellect. If you discount the purple prose, what she says is pretty heartbreaking, isn't it? And by the way, her reference in there at the very beginning to Democratic Underground, I don't completely understand unless there was some attempt by a thread or two over the course of Cindy Sheehan's rise and resignation to belittle her. But that sort of thing happens in a free and open forum. Perhaps Cindy just reached that burnout point where any criticism was considered fatal. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's just about 7 past the hour. Gosh, Kathy, we missed it last night, but it was the Miss USA. Was it Miss Universe or Miss Universe pageant was on last night? That's right, because Miss USA, when she approached the co-hosts to reach into the fishbowl to pull something out. I don't know what it was, but I saw it on ABC Network News tonight. She was booed by the crowd. Not her, but the fact that she represents the world's most fascist, determined, warlike state that's operating right now. You know, eventually China will probably take over that role. Putin over in Russia, in the Russian Federation or whatever the hell it's called. Now, he's trying to rattle, you know, he's rattling his missiles again. But for the time being, it's the United States. Has there ever been a time when a beauty queen was booed? Oh, my God. This is now. OK. Oh, all right. Well, it was in Mexico City. Well, then that doesn't mean anything, right? And haven't there been some sports teams? Yeah, the USA soccer team a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, when the team took the field, the team was booed. And had nothing to do with soccer, nothing to do with the young players. It has everything to do with the world trying to let the people of America know that they hate us. Because of what we're doing and because of our leadership. They hate us. They will boo some innocent. Where was she from? Is she from Georgia? Miss USA? Alabama? I don't know where she was from. But they booed her. Wow. Well, I don't know. I got a couple of emails here, one from Florain, one for Tom about from Tom about Cindy Sheehan's resignation. I appreciate your letters, folks, but I think maybe we should take some phone calls. What do you say? All right. I don't know. I'm just kind of at a bit of an impasse here, a bit of a loss. And I know a lot of other people are too, not knowing exactly what's going to be the trigger, what's going to finally wake us up. If we can still be waked up, that there is that issue. Is it still possible to wake us up? It's galling. It's just infuriating though to see how media in this country report things, and A, the Bush crime family just continuing to do whatever it damn well pleases. No restrictions, no recognition of co-equal branches of government. Well, one, in theory, the legislative, the judicial is totally sold down the toilet, just absolutely gone. That's going to take as much as 20 years to reclaim away from these neo-Nazis. But the Bush crime family just continues to operate as it damn well pleases. Now, you had an election? Really? How'd that turn out? That work for you? Oh, you changed the makeup of the House and the Senate to Democrats? Oh, really? Well, they just don't care. Just don't care. I am so old. I remember a time when had it in the middle midterm elections. Even though it's Bush is a lame duck president, more or less. He's an illegal president. He's illegitimate, I should say, an illegitimate president. But I can remember a time when, even if it were the second term of a so-called lame duck president, if the makeup of the Congress, both houses, had flipped the way it happened here, that president would go, oh my God, and do something to run back to the middle, to get away from the extreme right-wing attitude or extreme left-wing attitude, although there's never been extreme left-wing attitude in this country, but for the sake of fairness, I thought I'd phrase it that way. The president would run back to the center in order to prevent a catastrophe from occurring 2 years hence when everything was up. Well, not everything. 30 seats in the Senate, all 435 in the House, and the presidency. Everything's up for grabs. I guess it's more than 30 in the Senate. I don't even know what it is. But this president, it's like it didn't happen. This administration, Democrats are in control? Never mind. We've got Lieberman. Right? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Oh, you want less troops in Iraq? Here, watch this. I'm going to send more. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do my damnedest. I'm going to tell you 21,000. I'm going to send 90,000. You don't like it? Bite me. And for the soldiers, I'm just going to keep jerking you fools around. I'll just keep it up. I'm going to extend your tour of duty. It's not really a tour of duty. It's a tour of my little war. I'm going to extend it. I don't care how many of you die. I don't care how many of you get your arms blown off. I don't care. Leave me alone. I'm playing war. I'm war president. I'm war president. I'm fighting the first war of the 21st century. I'm a war president. And nothing, absolutely nothing is getting to this guy. Part of the reason, of course, is our media. Our media is not applying the pressure. You know, the New York Times still has not called for his impeachment. Still. You know, the Washington Post still has not called for his impeachment. Huh? The two newspapers of record, LA Times, still has not called for his impeachment. Nope. And the whole Justice Department thing, isn't that a beauty, huh? The Defense Department, Justice Department, all of these cabinet positions that have been, just been turned into huge, smelly cat houses, whorehouses, by, no offense to sex workers, by this corrupt, filthy administration. Just absolutely nothing. Nothing. And did you see this? No response. And did you see this thing in the Times this morning? You talk about a sad story. The headline is, Desperate Iraq Refugees Turn to Sex Trade in Syria. Now, when they say desperate Iraqi refugees turn to sex trade in Syria, you know they're not talking about the boys. They're talking about the girls. Oh, my God. And it talks about these families. The one girl, Hiba, who's 16 years old. And now she works at a nightclub known for prostitution. Oh, my. Her father is elderly, developed complications related to his diabetes, probably because he couldn't get his medication or else bought this crap from an American drug company that's now attempting to kill him. Desperate for some sort of assistance, the mom, Hiba, followed the advice of an Iraqi acquaintance and took her daughter to work at a nightclub along a highway known for prostitution. She said, quote, "We Iraqis used to be a proud people," end quote. She pointed out her daughter dancing among about two dozen other girls on the stage, wearing a pink silk dress with spaghetti straps, her frail shoulders bathed in colored light. Mom said, "During the war, we lost everything. We even lost our honor." This is astonishing stuff. And the people of Iraq want us to be gone. They want us all to die. They just want Americans to die, except the ones that are profiteering from the occupation and the invasion, like Cheney. Cheney has profiteered. Cheney and Republican contractors have made a fortune. Blood, stinking, decaying money. But they love it. They roll around in it. They eat it. They suck on it. That's why the world hates us. And to look at young Iraqi girls now, oh, well, I guess they have a choice, right?
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
Twenty-one past the hour. Email here from Mark. Hi, Mike. No major newspapers have called for Bush's impeachment or called upon him to resign. It's a far cry from 1998. Here's what the lead USA Today editorial on September 15, 1998 said, quote, "Has the president so failed in his duties to the nation that he should leave office? The answer to that question is yes. And the time for the president to leave is not after months of continued national embarrassment, but now Clinton should resign," end quote. And you can go to this website, beggarscanbechoosers.com, and there's a series there about newspapers that once called for Clinton to resign. But this is thanks, Mark. This is the horrific failure on the part of media to call for this guy's impeachment, this administration's total, just completely being turned out of Washington, run out of town on a rail, or better yet, tried for war crimes, impeached, removed from office. And people say, well, we don't have two-thirds vote in the necessary in the Senate. We can't, it wouldn't be a conviction. So what? Did that stop the Republicans from impeaching Clinton over nothing? And the Democrats won't do it. They won't do it. And the newspapers won't call for it. And the TV editorialists won't demand it. And you and I are beset with some sort of toxic inertia that keeps our asses glued to our chairs and we won't get up. I cannot understand why I don't get up. I don't understand it. But here I sit. Here I sit. Maybe, in an almost, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to be sarcastic or ironic or imaginative or whatever. But when was it, Kathy? About 3 years ago, I guess. I don't know. It was I was still with Air America, so it couldn't have been more than 3 years ago. But we were talking one night on the program, and, I tried to make the kind of jocular, half-witted point that living under fascism isn't as difficult as living under, say, Soviet communism. It really is not, from what I've read, unless you're a targeted group. Now, if you're a targeted group, then it's agony, it's death and destruction. But if you're not a targeted group, and I can't think of any particular group in the United States right now that would be targeted, with the exception of gay folk. So homosexual men and women might be the exception to this this theory that living under fascism is not that difficult. As long as you don't dissent, as long as you don't demonstrate, as long as you forget the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution and realize that your betters in government and industry will make the necessary decisions, decisions necessary, of course, for your survival. As long as you can sit down and shut up, watch television, read a popular magazine, go see a film, take a walk in the park, honor your leadership, don't protest, don't dissent, as long as you will pay your taxes, be quiet, don't pay attention to the scandals that erupt around you, whether they're connected to politics or the business world or religion. No. Accept the accepted religion. Do the things you're told. Go to work. Go home from work. Get up the next morning and do it again. As long as you do these things, fascism will just kind of float above you, float beneath you, float around you, and essentially leave you alone, unless, of course, you're a targeted group, which would be, in addition to gays, now might be liberals, or the few remaining activist members of what used to be the Democratic Party. But that's about it. Everybody else, you're kind of home free. Really. You just kind of sit back and give your life over to the people who know how to run it.
Talk Radio matters here.
It's about 25 before the hour. I guess I read this as kind of opposition to what I've been saying. Not opposition, really, but kind of a counterpoint. That's more like it. And then we're going to go to your phone calls. This is from our Aurora, Illinois Bureau Chief, Marianne, who writes, "Okay, Mike, first, did you really think that you wouldn't have been disappointed by now? The only reason that Bushko has gotten away with murder up to the November 2006 elections was the acquiescence of the Democratic leadership, if only as a coherent opposition. And the Democrats did have the Senate when they handed this monstrous regime power for preemptive war. Second, the Democrats really don't have the Senate now. Tim Johnson is still unable to vote, and Joe Lieberman threatens to jump over to the Republicans every time he feels he needs attention. Third, given the previous point, those Democrats that are a credit to the party's ideals are doing the best that they can, holding investigations, issuing subpoenas, exposing this vast subterranean corruption of Republican governance to some light of day, and in doing so, putting the brakes on some of the worst of this administration's plans. We haven't launched a full-scale attack on Iran. We have a year and a half heads-up to the 2008 elections that were being stolen by the machinations of Karl Rove through the corruption of the Justice Department. Worried Republicans have helped Democrats keep the Iraq occupation funding to a few months at a time and have started insisting on so-called benchmarks, nonsense on the face of it, but an implicit acknowledgement of the disaster in Iraq that Republicans haven't expressed until now. Nothing that has been done up to now in D.C. is the final word, and much still rests on our continued pressure on senators and members of Congress. Dr. Dean's 50-state strategy still continues, and I have every confidence that, at least in the Illinois 14th District, we will be electing a strong Democrat to the now decommissioned Denny Hastert's seat. I think that we're overwhelmed by the information that is available to us through Al Gore's Internet. The horrors that were the result of our policies in Central America, East Timor, and other places came to me 20 years ago largely through review articles, Amnesty International releases, Christic Institute reports, and the like. There's an immediacy now that is traumatic and a sheer volume of information that is hard to parse, even for those of us who are quite familiar with the history of the Bush family and U.S. foreign policy of the last few decades. It is understandable that people would rather enjoy their lives than take on power of this government or the whipped-up anger and fear of friends and neighbors. Cindy Sheehan's crusade against this war and this administration strains human endurance. I'm glad that she is taking a break. The rest of us, whose lives have not been so drained, need to continue what we're doing up until last November. Letters, calls, writing editorials, encouraging those Democrats who are trying to call this corrupt regime into account. And not one dime to our presidential frontrunners. They're taking care of themselves. The scale of a congressional district is within our ability to take on as regular citizens. There will have to be many more elections to undo the damage of the last 6 years, and each one will be just as critical as last November's, and we'll have to fight just as hard. Not trying to chill your rage, just a few thoughts. Marianne. Well, I know Marianne's right. I do. I know she's right. The only fly in the ointment in Marianne's email is any sort of a move to suspend elections or a continuation of the corruption of the system of election or electoral system that we use. I realize that the allegedly the scab has been pulled off that ugly wound and it's now just flowing and all the pus is coming out, you know, the Diebold machines and the stolen elections. But I wonder, I'm sorry I've become that much of a cynic. And I realize that, you know, I probably sound like some lefty conspiracy freak when I say, yeah, but what if the elections are postponed? And then I stop and think, well, wait a second. Why is that conspiracy nonsense, especially given the directive directive. Do you like that term that Bush signed on May 9th, which asserts that the power of the entire functioning of the federal government passes into the hands of the executive branch if anything untoward happens. You know, something that Bush could declare a national emergency. So I realize Marianne makes a lot of sense, and I hope she's right. I know she's right in spirit. We'll see, I guess, won't we? All right, as promised, let's do some... wait a second, just one last thing here. Mark Perkel, who writes many editorials and letters to the editor, and usually you'll find them posted at bartcop.com, which is the second most important website on the Internet. This is Mark Perkel's latest. You wouldn't think that news that Bush stole the 2004 election, too, would make the news. It did, but not here in America. The BBC broke the story about voter caging in the 2004 election. Caging is a way of massively disqualifying voters. It's a go-to-jail felony that was revealed last week when Monica Goodling testified that the Justice Department was involved in rigging the 2004 election. Similarly, just a few days ago, Bush signed a directive granting himself extraordinary powers in the event that he declares an emergency. The orders designated NSPD-51 as a national security presidential directive and HSPD-20 as a homeland security presidential directive gives Bush the powers of a dictator. Yet you won't see that story in America's news. What we do know is that Paris Hilton is going to jail, Britney Spears is a tramp, and Lindsay Lohan crashed her car driving under the influence. That's why we need to have a Clinton as president again, because when Clinton was president, if the president's fifth cousin worked for the government, it was a major scandal. With Bush as president, the news is suppressed. If not for the Internet, we wouldn't know what's happening in our own country. We think it's bad when Hugo Chavez takes over the media in Venezuela, but the same thing has already happened here. America has a dictator, and the media is his state-run propaganda machine. From Mark Perkel in California. Caging. Don't you love that term? But I like what Marianne wrote. All right, let's do some phone calls here, starting with Millie. Millie, who is calling in from Los Angeles. Hey, Millie, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. Wow, just listening to you, I just felt feeling so raw, just like the truth hurts so much. Interesting, I was when we was talking about the Chinese, did you notice that the official was sentenced not for poisoning people, but for bribery, taking bribes.
Right.
As if the government's losing face was the greatest crime, not the fact that people were killed. And
right.
There's no difference between them and this crime families, corporations, it's greed, it's this. And people, I have to say, Americans are the most uncurious people I've ever met.
We're trusting. We're too trusting. We're way too trusting.
No, it's not trusting. It's not wanting to. It's as if our curiosity was clipped when we were children and not taking a chance on looking on the other side of the fence. It's too impolite. Can't speak out, can't disagree, can't lose our temper because it's just too impolite.
Yeah.
That's all. I was introduced to Cindy Sheehan on your show. And what struck me was that she's so real. I've met her since. I've met her sister. I've met her brother. I live here in L.A. And that was so beautiful about her and why I clinged on and was moved by her, because she's such an ordinary person. Where she raised her children is a very, very simple town. She has a simple life. Her family, she comes from simple roots.
Uh-huh.
She's not a great, fabulous speaker, although it doesn't take a great auditor to tell the truth.
That's
some
true.
People are better writing, some people are better speaking, but when something is in you and so painful that it comes, it just comes out. It has to come out because once you open the faucet, the valve, it just comes out. And those people who know pain, who can relate to somebody's hurting,
right.
they're going to be touched by it, you know. And that's all I got to say. I'm so happy that it was someone like her that woke me up.
Mm-hmm.
And moved me, and I think that your writer was right that it's time for us now, the rest of us, to pick it up. She's just one person. We've got to go and do our own thing.
I hear you. Millie, thanks for checking in, Millie. I appreciate your call.
Bye-bye.
Double fries, I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American century.
We honor the notion of being able to speak freely and with political discourse.
Ten before the hour, back to your phone calls. Let me see here. Armand is calling from Florida. Armand, welcome to the program.
First, I got to tell you a short joke.
Sure.
I finally figured out how Barbara and the old man conceived Junior there. They had discourse, and then he became...
That's so not funny, Armand, but I'm used to that from you over the years. Now, what you really called about...
Well, what I really called about was why we're still there right now. The only answer is that Bush has a job. That's why he was installed in the presidential office.
Yeah.
And his job is to do everything he can to facilitate the corporate colonization and theft of the Iraqi oil by privatizing it and stealing it from those people over there. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's why we're there now. That's why the media is not saying anything, because if you look at the corporate connections and stock ownership, this quote liberal media never really was liberal. It's bottom line. It's not conservative. It's not liberal. It's bottom line. It's totally corrupted for all practical purposes. And it's invested and it's obsessed with the equity in the foreseeable future if they can help pull this theft off.
Well, then I guess it's time that we took some serious action against our media, too. Rather than doing what Chavez did and close down a TV station that shows too many soap operas, maybe we the people should get into the streets and close down TV networks. What do you think, Armand?
Well, I think that we have a right. As long as we're citizens of this country, especially when illegals can have the marches they have without permits, it seems to me that the world's watching us right now, and I think we have every right to have large demonstrations holding up signs and really...
Well, Armand, let me interrupt. First of all, that kind of oblique reference there to what do you call them, illegals... can hold huge marches without permits.
Right.
Is that true? Huge marches without... they're motivated. Wait, Armand, wait a minute. You know, I'll just pass over your choice of descriptive terms there and just say, well, they're motivated. The American public is not motivated. Now, let me give you a quick example of how motivated they are. Up until those demonstrations by, as you put it, illegals... up until those demonstrations of the past couple of months, there was no focus on this except on CNN, on what's-his-name's program, Lou Dobbs, but there was no focus on these alleged 12 million illegals in this country, none whatsoever. All of a sudden, there were rumblings that there was going to be an effort to drive these people out, and the new Ku Klux Klan, the militia groups that were targeting people coming across the border without the proper documentation, they kind of stirred things up. But look what happened, Armand. All of a sudden, oh my God, Democrats and Republicans get together, and working hand in hand in the interests of corporate America, they piece together legislation that will offer all sorts of forgivenesses and documents and pass keys and roads to citizenship, all for the sake of corporate America, because corporate America wants this workforce.
Well, wait
But I'm almost done.
I'm sorry.
But the point here, I think, Armand, is that when you have millions of people take to the streets in 7 or 8 major cities around the country, it gets everyone's attention. Folks who are not involved in pro or anti-immigration won't do that. Here we are involved in the very survival of our political system and the corruption brought about by this Bush regime. And I'll guarantee you, you couldn't get 100,000 people into the streets in New York City tomorrow if your life depended on it. But if you bring up the immigration issue, you will have 100,000 people in the streets. No, my mistake. You'll have 500,000. So there's a lesson in there for people like you and me somewhere, I think. Maybe. Maybe not. Thanks for your patience.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, Armand.
Remember the magnitude of the people and the marches against the war before the war. This last war, before he went in.
Well, I remember there were massive marches around the world. There was one or two. There were one or two here.
New York.
New York, D.C. I participated
LA.
In one where we had 300,000 people. But what good did it do?
Well, here's the point. You wonder who's at the top of the chain. You almost think that the people in the top of many of these organizations are, I don't know if they're alphabets from the government, and they're steering them and corrupting them, just like you read about a lot of other things that supposedly government plants have done against the citizens of this country that resisted oppression and corruption at the top. You almost think maybe that's the case there, that everything's so embedded and so corrupted that they steered them the way they did to get the least amount of gain as they got. If they'd have taken instead of to the streets, all these media outlets, how could they hide it if they had hundreds of thousands of people marching in front of their media with signs protesting and putting all the truth out there of all this, all the lies
You know, you just gave me a Molly Bloom sentence there. My God, no punctuation and no end. Look, let me just put it this way, Armand. You know, one snowflake does not a winter make. And one or two peace demonstrations in the United States do not a peace movement make, if you know what I mean. But that was a great sentence. Just went on and on and on. I felt like there's Molly Bloom sitting in front of her mirror, just brushing her hair, Kathy, brushing her hair.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. Have you signed up yet to be a founding member of Nova M Radio Network? If you have not, you might want to go to NovaMradio.com and check it out. Doesn't cost that much, $100 a year or $9.99 a month. I sure wish you would. And to the folks who send me emails and tell me, hey, I just signed up. I've been real derelict lately in answering emails, and I apologize for that. But every time I get one where somebody says, hey, I just became a founding member, you know, I wish I had a form. No form letters. I was going to say I wish I had a form letter and say, hey, thank you very much. You have determined that you want Nova M Radio to stay on the air. But I don't have one like that. But anyway, becoming a founding member gives you lots of privileges and benefits. No free tickets to the Roger Waters concerts, but damn near as nice. So check it out, will you? NovaMRadio.com. And become a founding member. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to drop this in just for the sheer hell of it, and then back to your phone calls. I've mentioned this a couple of times on this program about what is sometimes a good antidote to all this anxiety and angst and weirdness that's floating around out here. We have some friends who have a website called fairywoodland.com, fairywoodland.com. A couple of artists on the West Coast who put this together. And what they do is they make houses for fairies and elves and wee folk. And if you've not been to the web, they sent me one. And sometimes when I am really out of my gourd, you, Molloy, you know, I will kick back with a glass of wine and get this little fairy house. I have it out, but I'll bring it and set it on the table on the back porch where I'm sitting there, and I'll just let my mind wander. And I swear to God, at some point you can actually see the wee folk dancing about. So I'm just suggesting that if you want something that will ease your mind a little bit. I found this to be true. Go to their website. Just look at the pictures. You don't have to buy anything. Just look at the pictures of some of these fairy houses that they have made. It's astonishing. Every now and then we get, we email back and forth occasionally with Bridget and John. And this is a shameless plug for people who are important to me because of their art. So if you've got nothing better to do, just go to fairywoodland.com. I mean, the very name, fairywoodland.com, and check it out. Especially you people who subscribe to the old religions and are aware of certain things that occurred that there's no real archaeological proof thereof, but you know it happened anyway, right? So if you get a chance, just check it out. fairywoodland.com. And again, yes, it's a shameless plug. I shameless plug things. I shameless plug John Neem's music, our piano tuner in Las Vegas, who writes wonderful music. We play some of it on this program. I shamelessly plug Mark Marshall, our webmaster, who also is a musician, has a new CD out. So yeah, you know, we shamelessly plug here people whose work we really, really think is good. But fairywoodland.com, what these people do is unique. I've never run across anything like this ever, ever. Now, maybe other people do it, but I have never, ever, 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 ever seen little houses, little dwellings for fairies and wee folk. It's great fun. Great, great site to go visit when you just feel like, it's time to open a vein. No, it's not. Just drink a little wine and look at some of the fairy houses. It's so cool. Back to your phone calls. Mary is calling from Mississippi. Mary's been holding on forever. Thanks, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Oh, am so thrilled because I followed you from the other network.
From Air America?
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention.
Oh, that's all right. No, it's okay. You can mention Air America. You know, I still have a lot of friends who work there. I think the you know, the ownership is corrupt and dirty and stinky and they have bad breath, but I still have friends that work there. Well, thank you for following me to Nova M. I appreciate that.
On the internet, I have to tell you. So it was been fun listening on the phone. But what I wanted to say is that I think what happened to Cindy, my heart goes out to her. You know, unfortunately, she was joined by, what was it, 8 or 9 other families on Monday?
I don't know what happened on Monday.
I think 8 or 9. Service people were killed, U.S. anyway.
Oh, I see. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Unfortunately.
It was either 9 or 10 American soldiers.
Yeah, Americans and untold Iraqis. But
yeah.
Quickly, what I wanted to say is I think what happened to her is she finally saw the true state of affairs. See, Bush has been taking off the gloves. And for people who don't really understand is that he's the so-called stupid Bush has managed to consolidate power amongst the government, the media, industries, and the army.
Mm-hmm.
And even if the people decide to take to the streets, he now has funded and financed his own private army, as in those private contractors who are loyal only to him and his people. So I think it took slavery, what was it, took 400 years for slavery to end, and that wasn't peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this country is in for a big sea change, and he doesn't have to leave office if he doesn't want to.
Well, that is one of the prevailing thoughts out there, is that, you know, he's got all he needs is to set up another tragedy like what occurred on September 11th, 2001.
Right, exactly.
And then to activate his directive that gives him absolute and unchecked power. And yeah, it could happen. And, you know, I never thought I would be talking about stuff like that. That just doesn't it sound, Mary, like the wildest tinfoil hat conspiracy junk?
Well,
it
would if you haven't been listening to your show or other shows, which have tried to educate us. And so I want to remind folks that there are alternatives that can be done. As you know, we can't state what those are on the air. Unless we want to go to one of those places in, like, Guantanamo. I don't want to go, do you?
No, I don't think so.
But we also will have to get the Army on our side. That's the only recourse, really.
I hear you. Well, Mary, thanks for checking in. You take care, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Appreciate your call. Yeah, if you haven't read it yet, it's right out there on whitehouse.gov. In the news releases, it was a news release. You can find it. It was from May the 9th, news release May the 9th. It's called the National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive. And if you want to read this, you will find that everything is in place now. And this may be why... Well, no, this couldn't be the reason, because very few people know about this directive. If you rely on mainstream media to bring you information critical to the survival of this republic, like this information, you're not going to get it. You have to be tuned into whatever channels and sites and blogs and handful of radio programs that tell you about this stuff. I never would have known about it, except somebody sent me a link to it. National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive. And it's at whitehouse.gov in the news releases section. And there it is. And this may be one of the reasons why folks perhaps maybe are reluctant to take direct action. All it takes is just one event to trigger this directive, and it's open-ended. It can last as long as Bush wants it to.
Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the desire. Coo 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 coo.
We got you. Congratulations. It's the
important for people to listen. Therefore, I'm a person who does a lot of my work in private.
From Brooke, who is a third grade teacher, dear Mike, I often think to myself, if every single role were reversed over the last 7 years, you know, Democrats instead of Republicans, yada, yada, the Republicans who just took office in this role reversal would not hesitate to cut funding for this illegal war. They would slit the throat on that funding so fast, it wouldn't even be discussed. In my recent email to Nancy Pelosi, I begged her to ask herself, what would the Republicans do? If Al Gore and Nancy Pelosi had started this war, things would be very different. Well, yeah, but that's because, you see, Nancy Pelosi and Al Gore hate America. They're traitors. They're with the terrorists, not with the American people, right? Oh, God. All right, back to your phone calls. RB is calling from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Hey, RB.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You're looking for some hope?
Yes, I am, always.
There's a reason why he signed that bill on May 8th, and it's why it's not getting any airplay on the mainstream media, because they're worried. They're very scared, because the 9/11 truth movement is breaking out. It may not be noticeable to a lot of people who are trying to furiously ignore the truth, but it is actually breaking out everywhere. I've heard through the grapevine that even Bruce Willis is on board now.
And Bruce Lewis is?
You know, the movie star, whatever.
Oh, Bruce Willis. Willis. I'm sorry.
There's Charlie Sheen and Rosie and other people.
An old right-winger like Bruce Willis?
Yes, I guess he's finally woke up to some truth. The video evidence is out there now. Stephen T. Jones of BYU University has just did a series of experiments, and everything that the NIST people and the 9/11 Commission said about the World Trade Centers is wrong, and he can show you through experiments, eh? Mm-hmm. And so we got some solid evidence that way, and plus all the rest of the videos everywhere. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Just go to 911blogger.com and start looking. There's been a whole bunch of new ones coming out with a lot of video footage from that day with firemen saying we heard bombs going off and reporters on the scene saying, you know, mm-hmm. We've heard explosions, an explosion in the basement we heard, you know, and you hear all these eyewitness accounts that are never shown again. And then, and you ever watch the mainstream media? They see how they went after Rosie because of what she was doing,
mm-hmm.
and they forced her off. The more they do that, it's like Gandhi said: the first they ignore you, then they, you know, then they attack, they demean you and libel you, mm-hmm. and then finally they attack you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's I think that's why he signed the thing in May 8th, because if too much gets out too soon, I think they'll go to a drastic course. They'll set something up. There's a reason they sent 5 battle groups to Iran, you know. Things are poised. Any minute now, things could happen either way. So I think the only hope there is, and like I've said since September 12, 2001, you've known since then that is the only hope, because if as long as they have 9/11 to use as a lever on the American people who are ignorant to the truth and say we have to keep doing this because of what they did on 9/11, it'll keep happening. That's the only Achilles heel the New World Order fascist types have, is 9/11. Their very own creation, which they thought would become their new Pearl Harbor, could be the thing that hangs them, because they did it sloppily. It was messy. They made too many mistakes. They're trying to suspend the laws of science and nature on that day. They don't have a proper investigation. They fought it the whole way. They try to get Henry Kissinger to chair it. I mean, the guilt is written all over their faces whenever you see one of these activists and corner one of these guys and start asking them real questions. They just start panicking.
Mm-hmm.
So Rudy Giuliani today lied. He was caught on local New York news, and they even played it on Chris Matthews' show tonight, him lying about what he said to Peter Jennings, how he had evacuated the area because he knew that the towers were going to fall, right? Now he's trying to backtrack. He said, of course I didn't know that. But he actually used the word, we didn't know it was going to implode today. So, you know, if people really want to save the America and the rest of the world with it, because as long as America is being controlled by these people, they won't say anything about Russia and their false flag operations to get them involved in Chechnya. They won't say anything about the Chinese and their horrible human rights violations, where they're taking Falun Gong members and experimenting on them and harvesting their kidneys, injecting them full of drugs so that they're paralyzed, and sending them back to their families and saying, okay, you take care of them now. These things are going on in China right now, and these are the trading partners we so value.
that's true. RB, I got to leave it there.
It's got to happen.
All right. Thanks, RB. I appreciate you checking in. Don't be a stranger. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
The president has got to go. He's got to go. We want our country back. We're going to get it. Want to show him the door. Chemicals and nukes, you know, they never did appear. Yellow, orange, and red, just to keep us in fear. Said, hey, yeah, president has got to go.
Out, join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Before the hour, Roland writes in, hi again, Mike. I disagree about living under fascism is easier. The average person in the Soviet Union was in the same position. If they went along and kept their noses clean, they were allowed to survive without harassment. That was in reference to what I said several years ago and a year ago and a few minutes ago. Roland, I don't mean to suggest that living under fascism is easier than... I don't know what the comparison would be. All I'm saying is for the ruling classes, for certain people, unless you're a targeted group, living under fascism is a lot easier than living under communism. Under fascism, very simplistically, the state does not control business under fascism. Business controls the state, whereas under communism, just the other way around. The state controls business. There is a stagnation. There's a putrefaction of the human spirit that I truly believe occurs under any totalitarianism, but certainly under communism, Soviet-style communism. I'm not referring to small-c communism as laid out by certain communist philosophers, Marx, Engels, yada, yada. I'm not talking about that kind of communism. That kind of communism, to my knowledge, has never been practiced on a very large or, in terms of scale, level. Soviet communism was not communism. It was a totalitarian form of government that was just murderous. Nazism or German fascism certainly was not easy for the targeted groups. And there were targeted groups. For everyone else, for the ruling class, and I don't mean everyone else, for the workers managed to continue to work, and certainly the educated classes, if they weren't Jewish, were allowed to continue to do what they did as long as it was socially relevant, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And no criticism of Der Führer. That's all I'm saying, Roland. I'm not saying it's easy or sane. And the reason I pointed it out is because fascism is kind of a creeping form of government. Especially fascism is practiced by white people or Western Europeans or even Southern Europeans. It very seldom occurs as a result of an invasion or a military overthrow. It usually comes on little cat feet. Hitler never did anything illegal. that he was caught doing. He became chancellor as a result of a, you might call it a presidential directive. And Mussolini was elected by popular support. Franco, well, you know, he was, you didn't get much opposition to Franco either. Now, don't parse what I just said down and show me where I'm just wrong as hell. All I'm saying is that fascism very seldom comes as a result of an outside invasion. The kind of fascism to which I'm referring here, I guess all I'm referring to is German fascism. Right? No, I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that. That's cool. You know, that's why it's talk radio, I guess. Jake is calling from Arcata, California. Hey, Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going.
You know, it's about time that the so-called mainstream media actually paid attention to this National Presidential Security Directive number 51. You know, this thing is just like the renditions, the military commissions, the so-called Patriot Act, which was really just a reversal of our Bill of Rights. You know, the entire Bush administration, it's all been about presidential power. The neocons are fascists. Let's call them what they are. Mm-hmm. You know, these people are not interested in anything other than dictatorship. And Bush has said he'd rather be a dictator out of his own mouth, Mike.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, the bottom line here is we've got to do something to stop this. Impeachment should be on the table. We should be calling every last congressman and woman and telling them, including Nancy Pelosi, that it's time.
But we've been doing that. We've been doing that. There's no response. What you get back is a semi-form letter that says, look, you know, I, your Democratic member of Congress, I understand what you're saying, constituent. I understand how bad the Bush regime is. I understand we got to stop this war. But impeachment is not the way to go. I've seen the form letters. I don't write to my members of Congress anymore. I just don't do it because to me, it is an absolute waste of time. I still sign petitions, but I don't write to members of Congress because here's why. I fully expect that my member of the House, who is the person who defeated in the primary, defeated Cynthia McKinney, and I can't even, I'm sitting here trying to think of his name, Hank. Hank, do you know what it is, Kathy? He's our member of Congress. Hank Johnson? Is it Johnson? I have no contact with this guy, none whatsoever. I used to be on a reasonably secure first-name basis with Cynthia McKinney, as I am with John Lewis, who represents the 5th Congressional District, which is mostly Atlanta. I never wrote to Cynthia or to John asking for certain things to happen because I understood, and they understood, they knew me as one of their constituents. Not me, Mike Malloy, but me, one of the people, one of the faceless people that voted them into office. I didn't have to petition them. They knew damn good and well what they were sent to Washington to do from the 4th and 5th districts of Georgia. They knew exactly what they were supposed to do. So, you know, writing emails to people like Nancy Pelosi or any member of Congress, Jake, to me is insane. If these people don't know what the hell they were elected to do, then they should be turned out of office in the next election and put somebody in who does know. You see what I'm
saying?
Oh,
you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, the truth is, you're right. You know, if you send a letter, unless there's a check attached, they're not going to pay any attention.
No, they have some staffer, some low-ranking $6.50, $7.25 an hour staffer, click send email electronic response, you know, and that's the end of it. These people do not respond. And I don't see any reason whatsoever to send them emails about something like impeachment or minimum wage or these key issues that they knew we were sending them to Congress to do. I mean, that is redundancy of a sort that is idiotic.
Right. Well, I'd say it would be, you know, more effective is what's going on in some congressional offices around the country or people occupying the congressional office doing sit-ins. People talking about primary challenges, taking on some of these blue dogs, these moderates, you know, these people who are basically just Republican white, and getting them out and putting in some progressives who will actually do something for a change. You know, I know a lot of these people think that if we don't run somebody in the middle, that they'll be rejected. But if you look at the polls, hey, the independents are with us on the issue of the war. The independents hate the Republicans as much as Democrats do at this point. You know, we just need to get out there and get these Republican light, you know, just Republican wannabes. I mean, I'm sorry, but our local congressman here, Mike Thompson, this guy is basically just a pro-choice Republican. He's taking money from Lockheed Martin. And look at all these Democrats across the board who supposedly wanted to stop the war. The rhetoric, you know, was what we wanted to hear. But when it came time, you know, what do? They support the defense contractors, the people who are giving them money. Big surprise.
Yeah, I know. It's very enraging. Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Mike.
I appreciate what you had to say. J.E. from Oregon. The subject line says, Chavez's government just didn't renew the station license. This is what J.E. writes. All the Venezuelan government did was not renew the Caracas station's license, which is up for renewal, according to Greg Palast on Democracy Now! This morning. Anyway, and then there's something else about listening to the program delayed because it's on KPOJ in Portland. Thanks, J.E. I was not aware of that salient fact. You know, the way it's reported, and I haven't paid that much attention. I've seen the pictures because television provides pictures of people being gunned down with water cannons and so on and so forth. If there's no water cannons, there's not going to be any television. You know how that works. So what I've seen and what I've heard from the voiceover commentators is that, you know, Hugo Chavez shut down a television station that was in opposition to him. I did manage to do a little research, although I just didn't feel like it today. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, why bother with this nonsense? Hugo Chavez runs a country or runs a government which we tried to overthrow once or twice. I mean, literally tried to overthrow it, which is not should not come as a surprise. That's what American governments do so often, whether they're Democratic or Republic. They don't like somebody, overthrow the bastards. You know, put somebody else in. We don't care. They're just, you know, brown people or this colored people or that colored people. We don't care. Just overthrow them, you know. But to find out that all he did was refuse to renew the license, that does put a different slant on it, doesn't it? About 10 before the hour. Listen, your homework assignment for tonight or tomorrow is the following. I got an email here from Alan, and I'll expand on the email tomorrow. But I want you to go to this website and just look around. You know, I told you go to fairywoodland.com to ease your soul. This might ease your mind. Go to switch numeral 2 green. .org switch2green.org. You got that? switch2green.org. Just go there. That's your homework assignment. Just go there and take a look. switch2green.org. switch2green.org. And I'll elaborate a little bit on it tomorrow night. switch2green.org. It really either it's time to do something or it's not. Either the reality of American fascism is just going to engulf all of us or not. I mean, come on, folks. We're 7 years almost into this horror. You don't have any doubts left. You really don't. You know you don't. You might, like me, still have some wishful thinking left, but you don't have any doubts left. You don't. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this program. You know what's going on. And you know how ineffective and totally neutered the Democratic Party has become. You know it. I know it. I don't want to face it. I don't want to face it. I hate it. I hate the fact that I have to face the fact that my Democratic Party has become what it's become. I hate that. It causes me stomach pains. But how much longer can you keep beating your head against the same wall? Come on now, you know it. What is the definition of insanity according to Einstein? Doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different outcome, right? Come on, isn't that what we're doing? I know that's exactly what I've been doing. Exactly. I feel like such a jackass. That's exactly what I've been doing. Exactly what I've been doing.
Well, just one more election. Well, just one more. God.
So, you know where this is going. You know where I'm drifting. You know where I'm drifting. So check it out. Switch2green.org. The two in there is the numeral two. I don't care. Just go do it. Just take a look at it. You don't have to do anything. Just take a look at it and go, bat squeeze. Fine. But go take a look. Switch2green.org. Switch2green.org. Unless you're a chicken. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and answered your calls. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. So I'll give you two websites to go to tonight, fairywoodland.com and switch2green.org. Trust Uncle Mike. Check them both out. Back to your calls here. Bob, the poet from Tennessee. Hey, Bob.
Good evening, Mike. I'm shocked 1,500 people is all that has subscribed to the Founders Club.
I don't know. Is that? I thought it was 1,500 a couple of months ago.
It was 1,500 the Friday before you left for vacation.
Oh, my God.
That was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, well, okay. I guess there is just no motivation to do it. I don't know what to say. The continuation of this program does not depend on whether or not we sign up 5,000 Founder Club members. It does not. The continuation of this network depends on this network providing good programming and selling advertising on a national level, and will survive.
That's beside the point.
It is beside the point to me. It damn sure is. I feel like a jerk. I really do. I feel like this program is becoming superfluous and meaningless.
Well, I'm getting by on less than $1,000 a month Social Security. That's all I got.
Mm.
And I joined. People can come up with it. I know what money is spent on frivolous things. I know people can come up with it.
Well, everybody's got their priorities. That's a reality that we have to accept, Bob. We at Nova M, in the broadcast business where we have to go hat in hand and ask people for help, people have their priorities. I agree with you that for most people, you know, $10 a month doesn't sound like a lot. And some people it is a lot, as your case, it damn sure is a lot. But on the other hand, people have their priorities. And you know, apparently one of the priorities is to not subscribe to Nova M. We just have to roll with that punch. There's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. I'm not going to get on the program. I can't every night and browbeat people into signing up, becoming Founders members.
That's why I'm doing it for you. Okay.
You know, I'll mention it as often as I can with as upbeat an attitude as I can. But yeah, it's pretty painful to understand and to accept that we can't get 5,000 people together to contribute $9.99 a month or $100 a year to maintain whatever maintenance is needed this network. It's a shock to me. But it's an eye-opener. It is an eye-opener. And it
feeds cynicism because these are the people that are supposed to know.
Well, I hear you. But I can't, you know, I can't come out kicking ass every night and saying, oh, what's wrong with you people? That's just not my style. I can't do it.
But I wouldn't want you to anyhow.
Yeah.
I really
guess
called.
What? I used up all your time.
I know you did.
All right, Bob, call in tomorrow night and I'll put you on first. I swear to God I will, okay?
All right. Thanks,
all right.
Bob.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Oi! Sorry we didn't get to your call tonight, because I know we're leaving a lot of people hanging here. We'll do it tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Beloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.